Salam sejahtera, anda sedang menonton Awani Global bersama saya, Naila Huda. Minggu ini kita menyaksikan lawatan rasmi pertama Senator Penny Wong sebagai Menteri Luar Australia sejak dilantik oleh Perdana Menteri Anthony Albanese ke dalam Kabinet Baharu Australia bawah kerajaan Labour Party. Namun, Malaysia bukan tempat asing bagi Penny Wong yang menggambarkan lawatan ini sebagai lawatan balik kampung bagi beliau yang melawat ahli keluarganya di Kota Kinabalu. Dan berbanding dengan lawatan-lawatan lain oleh menteri-menteri luar dari negara lain, ini dilihat sebagai satu lawatan rasmi yang cukup istimewa dan mendapat banyak liputan media dan mungkin juga menandakan satu permulaan baharu buat hubungan antara Malaysia dan Australia selain daripada hubungan rapat Penny Wong bersama negara ini. Dan kita nak melihat lebih lanjut apakah signifikan dan kejayaan yang berjaya dicapai daripada lawatan rasmi ini dan apakah sebenarnya yang berada di keutamaan agenda Malaysia daripada hubungan bersama dengan Australia. Dan sudah bersedia untuk mengulas dengan lebih lanjut, sudah bersedia bersama saya Izzah Ibrahim, penganalisis dari ISIS Malaysia. Dan izinkan saya teruskan dalam bahasa Inggeris. Thank you Izzah for joining me today to talk a little bit about Senator Penny Wong's visit. And surely when we're looking at this trip, it's rather different from the other official visits that we've seen from other foreign ministers. Penny Wong herself described this trip as a trip to balik kampung. We know she's from Sabah, and so it is rather special. How do you see the significance of this trip, and has it achieved anything?
I think for starters as well, there's quite a lot of achievements for her as well, and as such a personal role for her, because not only is she coming as if to her balik kampung and all that, it's quite a big reflection on her own credentials, because she's maintained such a significant position in Australian politics, you know, from starting as a representing South Australia. Since 2002, she's had past experiences as a climate and finance as a minister and shadow foreign minister, in fact, as well, since 2016. So for her, it's like it's another high point for her. And I'm pretty sure she can keep going if she goes at the pace that she is. And for the country as well, it's a big step forward as well, because we've all been hit by the pandemic quite seriously too. And Australia just recently started opening their borders again and accepting people coming in and out. So this is exactly one of the best times to start, as we say, hit the ground running to reconnect with a lot of the countries that has been blocked off through for the past 2-3 years.
But beyond her personal credentials, we want to look at this official visit, you know, as a diplomatic effort of its own. Do you perhaps see this also as an effort to deepen soft power in the region? Because, you know, we're seeing a lot of media coverage of this visit and as well as a lot of the efforts being done before since being elected. We've seen a lot of very personal videos and speeches being made. How do you see this approach?
I think for starters, the disclaimer would be all countries, no matter how big or how small you are, you know, you don't have to be the US, you don't have to be China or Russia, or even middle powers like Australia, South Korea, or Japan. Deepening soft power or the sort of country and people-to-people links are always something on the agenda, because when you want, like, even if you want to look at it practically, the benefits, the trickle-on effects and that you get from this is always going to be something that they value. So it'll make things easier in the future. So communication, trade, which is something Malaysia does all the time, which is why our foreign policy from the get-go is to be friendly, to be a big contributing member in international organizations and platforms. So in a sense, as we can say as well, referring back to our PM, how he says, like, we refer to it as a bit of a big family as well. Like, we want to maintain these good links because it'll help us. And we are also a very trade-dependent nation. But at the same time as well, it's this sort of soft power is something as I think for Australia, they would consider it a bit of a damage control sort of situation as well, because a lot has happened throughout the pandemic, and Australia with the previous government has not exactly endeared themselves to some of the countries. China is the biggest example, because they've cut off a lot of important primary resource trade, like energy and all that. So this is exactly the time to rebuild that, because they can't keep going along on their own.
So talking a little bit more about Australia's relationship with Malaysia, what exactly is on top of the agenda for Australia before we move on to Malaysia and what we want to get out of these relations? But let's look at Australia for a second. What's on their agenda?
At the moment, I'm just going to build on with that bit as well, saying like extensive damage control was the big one too, because not only there was quite a mess left by the Liberal coalition government beforehand, there's a lot of rebuilding links, as we've mentioned earlier. So not only is China the big issue, they also have to deal with a lot of the spillover effects left by the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So a lot of this is trying to reassure not only just the region, so like say the immediate Asia-Pacific region, of Australia's intentions, and also to put themselves in a position where they are able to have a bigger say. So like, for example, in the region, they've done a lot of extensive visits, like right as soon as Senator Wong's finished with the official position, she's gone into the South Pacific to also tackle the issue of China's deepening links and cooperation with the Solomon Islands and a lot of the other nations there. And they've also been working quite closely with New Zealand on this. And on the other hand, they also want to look into other ways they can assert their sort of perspective, which what she's done before as well with the current PM, Anthony Albanese. They've been moving further into trying to represent an Indo-Pacific focus with NATO. So quite recently as well, they've been trying to get Australia, New Zealand, Japan and Korea to become involved in these sort of discussions at NATO summits.
So with this renewed approach, surely this creates more room, more opportunities for Malaysia to work harder to achieve what's on top of our agenda. So what exactly do we want to get out of this relationship with Australia that's probably looking more optimistic in the years to come?
Actually, you're quite right to build on that. It is quite optimistic because not too long before, we've just formalized a comprehensive strategic partnership, which was quite a big jump. And it was also quite extensively mentioned during the meeting between our foreign minister, Saifuddin Abdullah, and during Senator Wong's visit. And so, yeah, the three areas that they were trying to look for is economic prosperity. So which is the biggest one on the table, because economic and domestic recovery post-pandemic is the biggest thing on the agenda for everybody. No matter how you want to spin it, that's the biggest focus right now. And there are other elements as well that they wanted to highlight as well. I think the biggest one that our foreign minister has mentioned was improving our people-to-people links, which is quite big because of our considerable student population there. I mean, I'm one myself. And there's that. There's also the sort of regional security engagements too, which, you know, strengthening ASEAN and its institutions. We also have deepening our security links. And one of the few things especially was, by security, it's not necessarily defense of against military threats. A lot of things that we've highlighted quite considerably was the tackling this health crisis, also other elements such as cybersecurity, also the other and a lot of the other disaster management is something that's quite big on the cards now.
Speaking of defense, what also got a lot of attention was AUKUS, probably something that we haven't heard a lot about in the news in the past few months. I would say it has rather died down, conversations about AUKUS, but this has seen a sort of revival, especially with Penny Wong's visit and how this has been reiterated by our foreign minister, concern for AUKUS and what it could mean for the region and stability in the region. Do you still see this, do you see this as still being a cause for concern, or perhaps, on an international level, perhaps, but when we're talking about people-to-people links, we also want to include the public's perception, the Malaysian public. Are they still concerned about AUKUS and the potential risks that it could bring to the region?
At the moment, I don't think there has been significant concerns about it, because I think one of the really difficult things that with Malaysia's own experience that we don't, quite fortunately, we haven't had that many experiences with existential threats. quite fortunate, and there's no concerns of nuclear warfare, armed attacks has been very low for us, thankfully. So a lot of these things are really hard to visualize in the public mind. You know, it's not like, you know, the US or Russia, who have grown up, especially in the 50s, the peak era of that sort of fear. But not only that, and so the thing is that the most we've heard of is official statements. So that not too long ago, our prime minister has mentioned quite, I would say, the way he has framed the concerns, such as one was allowing AUKUS to exist can set a negative precedent to China, meaning that they can, so if they were to assist other nuclear armed countries such as North Korea, they can do so because we already have these sort of submarines going around the, these waters as well. And also similar statements where he's made in Nikkei, the Japanese news platform, that AUKUS may also be taken advantage of by the major economies involved. While I can understand these concerns because a lot of these a lot of these security considerations can take on a much more dramatic lens to it. It's just it may come from it, but the one thing I think is that it may be misinterpreted a little bit too much, which is why that while they're saying this, despite saying this, not much has happened. But the problem is because we said this, other countries, that's why like Australia has had to come in as well, to not just here, they went to Vietnam and Indonesia to do that same level of damage control and reassurance. Based off what has been said, they've both Senator Wong and our foreign minister have said that they've tried to informally talk this out, which is good because sometimes you don't have to be very transparent about this, so long there is a government-to-government understanding. But I think one of the biggest things as well, we should, in a way to ease the concerns, is that they are quite adamant on stressing that these are nuclear-propelled submarines. They're not armed. So I think that's the one thing for some people, that it's easy to spook them, but just having the word nuclear in it can kind of get people panicking for maybe the wrong reasons and can push themselves to overreact more than necessary.
Now, I want to go back about this optimism that I think quite a lot of people share when we're looking at, now it's still rather early days for the Labour government, but there, I think there is a general optimism and hope for what's to come, and not just for Malaysia, but also just renewed strength renewed and strengthened ties between Australia and other ASEAN countries as well. Do you see this optimism? Do you share this optimism? And have we so far seen a stronger approach from the new government?
I would agree it is a bit too early to tell. It is good for them that they've started this quickly. They didn't, they didn't dilly-dally, which is sometimes quite the concern for some countries. I mean, the US is quite a good example. After the election of the Biden administration, they were quite slow in deploying and in selecting the representatives for their foreign diplomatic corps, and then it became, and to quite a lot of people, especially in Asia, that they were wondering, why is this the case? Was it disinterest? Was it they were busy? So it by showing their initiative, it at least sets a good start. But at the moment, given the current state of mistrust and concern, that I think it's a bit too early to start celebrating anything. I think at most we should give it a few more months. And also, I think they would truly be tested if we start having more serious issues again. So let's say another reemergence or another more developments in the Myanmar situation. Like, how will they handle that? Or how will they also respond to China in the future, in the upcoming months or years?
I do want to talk a little bit more about Myanmar later, but going back to ASEAN, so it's still early for us to evaluate how they've done so far, but what kind of position Does ASEAN want Australia to play in this region?
That's actually a bit funny because it seems to be a big question mark on both sides. Because Australia, and another good point as well as New Zealand is one of them too, they really they do value their role as a dialogue partner, and they also really value the sort of position ASEAN and its institutions have. So these are the things that they have identified to not only something they must support, but it's also something that they would also like to use should there be other tensions or security concerns in the region. But the issue is that sometimes, I mean, I think the biggest elephant in the room is the difference in values, and also some of the things ASEAN has from the start will not allow them, will not allow like the dialogue partners to get the sort of results they want. So meaning that, you know, for certain issues like humanitarian issues, what Australia would want or would want achieved will be something almost impossible given certain principles in ASEAN, like our non-interference policies.
I do also want to talk about Myanmar, obviously a big concern for ASEAN at the moment, and how Senator Penny Wong recently has also signaled that Australia is likely to impose new sanctions on Myanmar's military rulers, especially now looking at the case of Professor Chantrenal, who is still in prison. Is there also optimism for how Australia is about to step into this new area of, under the new Anthony Albanese administration? How are they going to handle the Myanmar conflict, do you think? Do you see them playing a bigger role, playing probably a tougher hand? What do you think?
I think given the current responses, it's a bit of a, they kind of have two fronts, which can kind of seem confusing to some, because on one hand, their humanitarian aid and support is one of the is quite strong and it's quite admirable as well, because they have made a point to make sure that all the aid and everything has gone into non-government bodies and institutions, because to make sure that they don't want to be supporting the military regime in any shape or form. So they'll be looking for trusted partners, multilateral ones, NGOs, to make sure that these the people, including the vulnerable population, gets this sort of support. But at the same time, there has been some hesitation that we've seen, because they weren't that quick to jump on the sanctions either. Because they were saying that, because if we're referring to what the previous coalition government did, they believed that the sanctions weren't in their national interest and would run counter to ASEAN-led or ASEAN initiative solutions. So the problem is, it's like this goes back to a bit of that problem where they're not sure how they want to use this regional platform, but the ideas of how they want to respond or to take a hard approach is not compatible. So it's either they have to, I don't think they will want to take a unilateral, so like an Australia-only response, but they probably have to be looking at other ways as well. So let's say other multilateral sanctions or other punitive actions to get that result they want. But through ASEAN, I think there would be other approaches would be needed to do so.
And just to delve a little bit deeper into the Myanmar conflict, as we know, some probably see that there's been a lot of time and space given to ASEAN and their own approach in handling the conflict, as you say. Do you think that there has been too much time and space given to them, or is there a need for perhaps a unilateral approach or other multilateral approaches, as you've mentioned?
It's a bit hard to say, because with how difficult, and also this was ongoing in the middle of a pandemic as well, so that sort of action may accidentally trigger something else. So let's say it could make the healthcare crisis significantly worse. But also at the same time, given the sort of not government, the leadership that they have right now, it's also the risk of, we don't want any sort of like the re I think one of the biggest reasons why they didn't want to push any harder is because they fear for the human cost, because it is quite clear that that isn't holding them back. to make sure that they can secure their position in power. But at the same time, I'm not sure whether unilateral approaches can work, because at the moment, given the sort of other forms of support Myanmar mm-hmm. can have, noticeably their connections with other neighboring countries, I think it would be quite difficult to separate, because other countries in the region too also have not necessarily similar backgrounds, but they also don't want that same attention should they be critiquing or should they be acting against it as well. So I feel like there's a very awkward balance of they don't know how much pressure to assert because they don't want something unwanted happening back towards them as well.
So with a lot on the plate right now, I mean, we were talking about Myanmar, we're talking about ASEAN, a lot of other things. I do want to talk a little bit about just how the domestic politics are going on right now in Australia. As we've said a lot before, it's early days for the new Labour government under Anthony Albanese. But just talking a lot about this new approach in foreign policy for Australia, how do you think perhaps the Australian public is looking at this approach?
Not too sure, because historically Australian foreign policy has been quite bipartisan. Like, it doesn't seem to be there's no particular policies or there's no particular mm-hmm. actions that are favored by one side or the other. It hasn't also been much issue brought up in elections, actually, mm-hmm. though at the same time, I do feel that nowadays, given how increasingly polarized the world is right now, the Australian public might, and actually even quite a lot of countries around the world might experience this too, that the sort of our actions or inactions in foreign policy can be leveraged against mm-hmm. public perception. And I'm not sure with the how, because given the current climate as well, because given unfortunately, the pandemic is the biggest thing hanging over everyone's head right now. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure, unless they can spin it in a way that these sort of new engagements can help them. Mm-hmm. So like, if it can come back to show significant benefits to the country, it'll be a bit, it could be a non-issue for them. Like, they probably wouldn't respond as much. But at the same time, I think it can be met with also mild disinterest, because at this time, not many people do want to look beyond, unless it's those depending on certain industries.
Hmm. I do also want to talk about how the Malaysian public might view this. I mean, I know foreign policy is also not a rather popular issue for the public to discuss about, but surely, as you mentioned, with a large Malaysian student population there, and we're hearing a lot about immigration issues as well, visa approvals and whatnot, beyond the Myanmar conflict, beyond AUKUS, these are probably the kind of things that Malaysians would want to hear as a positive development from our relationship with Australia. So what do you think the Malaysian public would want to see out of this relationship moving forward? And how do you think they would probably see this official visit probably being seen as the first step to this renewed ties?
I think one of the things is the increased business opportunities. So business, I think tourism as well is a big one too for us, because a lot of countries in Southeast Asia significantly depend on that sort of industry to get for people coming in and out. So yeah, I think trade and economics is probably the biggest thing right now. Other people-to-people links, because some of the things that we also have been trying to push for is more on engagements of cultural diplomacy and other sort of community-based approaches that we can share as well. So we're not trying to turn it too much of a so it's like less political, more of a social outreach as well. Mm. But at the same time, I think the most important, I think if we want to let the public know that this needs to be more publicized, or it needs to be felt, because a lot of this really does come off at a very official level. We haven't seen that much of that grassroots approach. And that's why I feel like whenever we want to try talk about these foreign relations, it becomes really disconnected, because we don't see it. You know, it's all behind these closed mm-hmm. doors, behind official visits that regular people can't attend or experience. So I feel like this, for this to be felt more significantly, is to be more on a grassroots community level approach, and only then that we can really start building and getting more out of these relations with countries such as Australia.
Plenty more I'd like to discuss with you, but unfortunately that's all the time that we have today. Thank you so much to Izzah Ibrahim, analyst from ISIS Malaysia, sharing her thoughts with me on Senator Pani Wong's visit this week. Terima kasih kepada Izzah Ibrahim sudi bersama saya dalam Awani Global untuk kongsikan sedikit pandangan mengenai lawatan rasmi Senator Pani Wong, Menteri Luar Australia. Itu sahaja masa kita ada untuk Awani Global pada jam ini. Bersama saya Nala Huda, kita jumpa lagi. Salam hormat.